Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
We happen to be, we being the corporate we, News Talk, on the front of a lot of papers today. Irish Independent, radio wars break out as News Talk blocks RTE. The Daily Mail says Liveline's new host dropped by the Late Late. And in case you didn't see it, Liveline's new host is, of course, Kieran Cudahy, formerly of this parish here on The Hard Shoulder. I'm joined by Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent and Indo Daily presenter, and Danny McConnell, editor of the Business Post. Tabitha, one of the general sort of principles of radio is that things move tremendously slowly and you don't tend to get major upheaval. We have had more upheaval in the last couple of weeks than I think in living memory in Irish radio. Can you do a reminder of, in the world's longest transfer window, who has gone where?
Yeah, I think so. We'll go with Clare Byrne, because there's been a number of retirements, people leaving within RTE, which actually I think I was looking at it yesterday. If you go back to 2022 and look at the lineup on RTE, then it is almost completely changed by Morning Ireland. You know, like Brian Dobson has left, you know, Ronan Collins has gone. When you go that back that far, only exactly by 3 years, it's just an entirely different new cast of people. So if you want to, so we had Clare Byrne, who was leaving and coming over here to take over from Pat Kenny, and then Pat Kenny going to the weekend. Then we had Ray Darcy this week, who was announced that he was no longer going to be on RTÉ Radio 1, saying he was hugely disappointed with how management in RTÉ handled that affair. Then, of course, like you mentioned, we have Kieran Cudahy, who is now taking over.
I can't mention him in here.
You can say whatever you want, Danny.
KC then is going over to Liveline. But then within that, there's been a huge rejig. I would say a huge rejig of the lineup for RTÉ Radio 1, because things have stayed the same for years and years and years. The people have stayed the same. The time slots have changed. Do you want me to run you through those?
Bring us up to speed.
Morning Ireland, obviously, it stays the same, but we do have Mary Wilson and Anya Lawler, who have either retired or moved away from Morning Ireland. So there's two slots free there. Then straight after
Anya Lawler, still very much proving her worth with that interview with Jim Gavin.
So, absolutely. Then we have David McCullough, who's taking over from Clare Byrne, but will move from 9 to 11 and will be in direct competition with Clare Byrne when she moves over to this station. Then you move on to Oliver Callan, who will be going from 11 till 1 o'clock. Then I think we have the news at 1, then Liveline, and then we will have Louise Duffy, who's currently doing the kind of 1 hour music slot,
which was once Ronan Collins' old slot.
Exactly. She will be doing the 3 p.m. till 4 p.m. slot. Then we have Drive Time, which has two new presenters, which is Colm Mungon and Katie Hannon, and they've been pulled back in half an hour earlier, starting at 4 o'clock. And then we have a new sports program, which will start at 6 p.m.
Now, in the midst of all of that, we also have some very interesting bits of gossip and consternation. What did you make of the Ray Darcy departure and the manner in which it appeared in the papers, Denny?
It all seemed very messy and all seemed very rushed. I'm doing a big piece for the Business Post tomorrow. I think it'll be online later on today. But it just seemed that it wasn't clean. Like, events seemed to just take over. You know what I mean? And I suppose the point being made to me, when you're announcing a major overhaul of your schedule in the middle of a presidential election campaign without a start date, it doesn't particularly look great, right? However, you know, Patricia Monaghan left here in Marconi House to go to RTÉ a year ago with a clear mandate to modernise the schedule and kind of make it more fitting for a kind of a modern audience. And it's clear that, you know, she's been given a pretty free hand to do what she wants. And you know, so she's had a considerable amount of power in all of this. The manner of Ray Darcy's, I suppose the decision to remove Ray Darcy from the schedule is probably not as surprising. It didn't have a sponsor. It has been underperforming relative to the other shows in the schedule. And you know, I think they had done quite an extensive public outreach. You know, they've done focus groups, etc. That, and I think it was showing to be the weak link in that 7 to 7 schedule daily, right? And what I was getting from people in RTÉ yesterday is that, like, those shows need to wash their face. You know, they need to be commercially successful. They need to be ratings successful. And Ray's show wasn't either. And I also think since Ray left Today FM, where he had a hugely successful show here on for quite a number of years, it never landed the same way. I mean, like, shows tend to have memorable moments. I think Darren McManus is making this point in the end of this morning. You know, big shows tend to have memorable moments that you can recall years after. Ray's show on RTÉ barring maybe the Vicky Phelan stuff that he was, in fairness, due credit to him, it didn't have that succession. And it was just that kind of, I won't say dead time on the schedule, but it
made, well, yeah, that's the, there is an issue there, surely, though. How much of that, if you look at where he was in Today FM, he was in prime real estate that had once been Jerry Ryan's, that had once been Gay Burns. That mid-afternoon slot has never been greatly coveted in the same way as that mid-morning.
But again, that cuts the core of the decision to put Ray on at that time on RT1. I thought at the time when he was moving, they would have put him into that Jerry Ryan slot on 2FM. That, to me, would have made more sense. But they didn't, and I think he struggled. He also struggled on that. He replaced Brendan. They stood down Brendan O'Connor's Saturday night show on television to put Ray in, and it was a poorer version of what Brendan did. You know, and let's think, that's a show that had to literally beg, borrow, and steal to get guests on, because the Late Late Show coveted all the best guests, right? So Brendan, I think, made a better fist of it, and I think that was shorn out because of the relatively short time frame that the show was on the air. I'm not massively surprised. I think, though, after a really stellar career in broadcasting, both on TV and radio, I think Ray can be legitimately sore about the nature of his exit. I think particularly people...
Well, what are you hearing? Was it that Ray was offered a deal that he didn't want?
No. I was told he was brought into talks 2 or 3 weeks ago and told his services would no longer be required. My understanding is that an alternative offer, like a reduced offer in terms of another slot, etc., that was put on the table. I told that wasn't 2FM, it was something else.
But there was something.
There was something else, but obviously it wasn't deemed to be appropriate or acceptable to Ray, and ultimately it was end game. The manner of his departure, because obviously people have honed in on this idea as to whether or not, why wasn't he allowed to say goodbye to his listeners. People might remember he didn't say goodbye to his listeners on Today FM either. That happened over a Sunday night into Monday. He was gone. So that's twice now in his career he hasn't been able to say goodbye to his listeners.
Well, although Patricia Monaghan, the new head of audio in RTE, said that she would have facilitated that had he wanted to.
Yeah, I think ultimately it got to a point in the discussions when clearly that alternative offer wasn't acceptable. And I think news was breaking around. There was obviously moves afoot. I think Ray either took the decision, I'm told that Ray took the decision that he wasn't going to go back on, having initially indicated that he would do the show, but then ultimately withdrew. But again, there's two sides to that story. So, but ultimately, there was a very quick breaking down. But there is a lot of talk, and I had it confirmed from people within that, there were, I won't say heated discussions, but they were seen to be kind of animated discussions between Ray and senior bosses, around the campus, in recent days. So, Ray Darcy, I think, can feel somewhat hard done by in terms of the manner of his exit. And the big question is, at the age of 61, where does another opportunity for him? Because he is, without question, an extremely talented, extremely professional broadcaster.
And it is worth pointing out that the numbers to which he grew that show on Today FM, it became the successor to the Jerry Ryan program.
Without question.
It was massive.
And I mean, to do that, to do that against the teeth of the competition, of that resistance of people to move the dial, from RTE, I think is a notable achievement.
Normally, Tabitha, we would have a week or two to come to terms with this kind of upheaval. Barely, 24 hours later, we then get a similar departure from News Talk, this in the form of Kieran Cuddihy. Again, no goodbye.
Yeah, no goodbye as well. And then also, as you're saying, that is on the front pages of the papers today, that he was due to appear on The Late Late Show, obviously because he was taking up this massive job of taking over from Joe Duffy on Liveline. He was due to appear as a guest with Patrick Keelty. And then that didn't happen because, according to the reports, there was legal threats, is I think what the Mail is saying from News Talk, that essentially that Kieran Cuddihy is still under contract here in News Talk. So I think there's a ton of messiness that's going on with this, with everything, with Kieran Cuddihy, but also it's been going on for weeks. Even when you go back to Claire Byrne, when she was announced, it was actually more from this side that we found out that Pat Kenny was going to be moving, and then kind of it felt like RTE had to catch up then and say, well, actually, Claire Byrne will be stepping away. She is going over to News Talk, and then David McCullough is going to be coming in. And I know there were some reports that there was some unhappiness with how that was handled, that David McCullough, by the sounds of it, was kind of just offered it. There was no other people really approached for that position. So they're just, because there's such upheaval and such a change, and Patricia Monaghan is very clearly has gone into RTE, as Danny was saying, and has decided to completely upend the schedule. I think there's just a tone of messiness, and whether or not it's kind of running away, in terms of how this is coming out, it's just one thing after another over the last few weeks, including Ray Darcy, as we were talking about.
What do you make of the major schedule changes then? Because if you go back to that mid-morning slot, that 9 o'clock through, it was once the Gay Byrne show, and they effectively broke it in two, and they gave the human interest bits to Marion, and they gave the harder bits to Pat Kenny, and that has kind of pertained in one way or another ever since. We've now reversed that, so it's now going to be 4 hours of Current Affairs every morning on RT1.
Yeah, that's a lot, and I kind of always understood why, you know, the likes of Oliver Callan or even Ryan Tuberty before him was there. It kind of broke up the morning, because Morning Ireland is a really intense Current Affairs programme from 7 until 9. And then you had Oliver Callan, who was able to do the lighthearted bits, and he was doing some serious interviews as well, but you would have him going through the papers and that, is, you know. But I think what we see here is that the RTE and Patricia Monaghan is eyeing up competition here and is saying, well, do we want to start an hour later in terms of the Current Affairs offering that we have? And that, I think that's exactly what we're doing. And even when we go to the sports show at 6 o'clock, I think, again, we're seeing that is direct competition with Off the Ball here, which I think starts at 7 o'clock. So I think coming in an hour earlier, you know, there was some, what I was reading in the papers, whether or not that 6 o'clock slot for sport will work, because that would traditionally be considered a news time, 6 o'clock in the evening. You know, we have the 6-1 news and all that kind of thing. So yes, whether
the audience falls off a cliff for some reason at six,
does it? Mm-hmm. Okay, well then that's interesting. So they're coming in an hour before Off the Ball, and whether or not, you know, that will work. So I think that's exactly what we're seeing, is that Patricia Monaghan is sizing up the competition and wants to be able to go head to head.
What about the tactic of the McCullough going to 2 hours? Because one of the things that will do is it will almost immediately make that either the second largest or largest programme in the country, apparently directly opposite Clare Byrne over here. The numbers will be very good just by virtue of the time slot.
It will. And I think all of this is like the whole strategy, I think, as I said, is to maximise audience, and is to maximise audience throughout the day and to avoid those sort of peaks and troughs. You know, I remember interviewing Pat Kenny when Ryan Tuberty was in that 1 hour slot and had taken over, and I remember saying he was not a little bit sniffy about Ryan, in terms, because he kind of said it stuck sandwiched between the two big beasts of Morning Ireland and the PK show, as he called it, right? But there's that natural carryover from your big beast show for that time slot. So I think, without question, but I like, if you're Patricia Monaghan and Clare Byrne's coming on at 9 o'clock, are you going to leave that hour free? You're not. You know what I mean? You're going to have to go head to head. But to the point that was made earlier on, to Tavis's point earlier on, like, I mean, having 4 hours of just non-stop Current Affairs is a lot, right? And you could see the merit of, like, the idea of having that hour of light relief, that 9 to 10 slot. The old Ronan Collins, Louise Duffy slot is a bit of light relief before the news at one. You're into Live Line, again, a bit of light relief for them before the drive. That staggered approach seemed to make sense. But it's, what's really interesting for me is, you know, you look at drive time and in RTE, and you had Cormac O'Hara and Sarah McInerney having just won the Imro for the best broadcast for the show, and Sarah winning for best bro. Sorry to say this, I don't know if Sarah winning for best broadcaster. But then they're removed off, you know. And I was asking this question yesterday of RTE people, and they said, yeah, so the market research showed they wanted the commute starts earlier than it used to. So people are in their cars at 4 o'clock, and they want to be on air from 4 o'clock. I think a nod to Kieran and the guys at the Hard Shoulder had started at 4 o'clock here. But also as well, they wanted a softer edge. And I think both Sarah and Cormac are known to be very kind of combative and robust, very, you know, very, extremely good and professional broadcasters. But it's interesting that the tone I was getting from RTE yesterday was that softer touch was needed at that slot. So it may not be the hard, fast, you know, 7 minute slot, you know, top one. It might be slightly longer, slightly more analytic is slightly the approach that I was being directed towards.
What then is the expectation in respect of Liveline? Because if you look at the graphs of shows on radio around the country, at one point there was a sort of an Ayers Rock graph for Ray Darcy on Today FM.
Yeah.
People listen for Ray. People listen for Gerry Ryan. You could argue the same about Liveline. There was a peak for that show, and some would say that was thanks to Joe. Is it a poison chalice?
Well, I don't know if it's a poison chalice. No, I think it's just what Kieran will have to do is come in and somewhat make it his own. I think trying to copy what came before won't work. You know, Joe, as he said, I think people tuned in for Liveline to hear what people were saying, as much as what Joe Duffy had to say about the topics as well. So I think it'll be a case of carving it out for himself and figuring out what way he wants to do things, but maybe not completely throwing everything out as well, because clearly there's a show and it's work. It's been there for decades now. People want to hear what the nation is saying. And I think even when we look at you know, social media, where there might have been a big event at one stage and we'd kind of all flock to Twitter to see what other people were saying. We don't really have that now. You know, you have some maybe like Reddit and that and forums, but I think that there is still a lot of demand and people want to know what other people are experiencing and what other people's opinions are. So I don't necessarily, I wouldn't say it was a poison chalice. I think it's a big job and they're big shoes to fill. But Kieran, you know, we know he's an experienced broadcaster. So I think it's just what he decides he wants to do with that slot.
What then about the public service remit and all of this, Danny? Because there was a day when, if you looked at RT1, albeit not fully 7 to 7, but the Derek Mooney programme that Ray took the slot from, that was a wildlife programme and it answered a particular public service remit. We had Arena with Sean Rocks, which, albeit later in the evening, also answered part of the public service remit. It's hard to look at their prime time 7 to 7 schedule now and say there is anything there that wouldn't live happily on raw commercial radio.
True. But I think the reality is that in a competitive market, you have to go where the audience is and you've got to serve the tastes of a changing audience. And that was, I think, at the heart of what Patricia Monaghan said in the news.
If you're a state broadcaster?
If you're a state broadcaster, yeah. I mean, like, but she did mention, like, that public service remit was at the heart of what she said yesterday as well. So, I mean, you could argue that, you know, the 2 hours of Morning Ireland, which essentially, you know, along with News Talk Breakfast, you know, the nation wakes up to it, it sets the agenda for the day, etc. like that, you know, and into your, you know, there are elements of the Clare Byrne show at the moment.
I think Shane and Kira might beg to differ, but fine.
I said both shows set the agenda. I think I did say both shows. And I would never...
one of your columnists and everything.
I would never denigrate one of my own columnists like that. But those shows set the agenda for the day, you know, slightly bit more analytical. But I mean, through all of those shows, you'd say there's a public service remit. I mean, one would see, like, I was joking.
Oh, well, it's hardly the Irish language. It's hardly music and heritage. It's hardly history. It's hardly wildlife.
But is that the job of RT Radio 1? Is that the job of,
the slate in general.
By definition, is it not?
I would have thought that's why you have a suite of channels in RT to do all that. That's why you have RT Gold, you have 2FM, you have Lyric FM and all these, and Radio na Gaeltachta.
Oh, but is that not to alleviate yourself the pressure of actual responsibility to deliver on an audience? You have to balance the thing of getting a big enough audience and then giving them the little bit of fibre in their diet. If you bury it out on the digital channels that nobody listens to, you can tick a box, but it doesn't affect anything.
I think you're doing a desperate disservice to your own work here in News Talk and Today FM that, like, you don't provide a public service. Look, I mean, radio shows of this nature do, like, by your very nature, you do a public service by informing and entertaining. And what's wrong with entertaining the public? It's a very important public service.
There's also no doubt that if those programmes wouldn't be as popular as the slate of programmes that we're seeing now, if they weren't doing as well, they weren't performing, they didn't have the sponsorship, they weren't getting the listeners, that we would have RTÉ board dragged into the media committee, the Oireachtas committee, or into PAC or whatever it is, and saying, why aren't you competing with the commercial broadcasters? Why aren't you able to get the sponsors? Because we've seen that there's been drama around around funding for RTÉ and the licence fee, that, you know, people have been reluctant to pay the licence fee. So, you know, it's also about giving people value for money and whether or not people are willing to fund RTÉ, because you can see the committees if that happened.
53106 if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp. Text saying people are having their dinner at 6 p.m. That's why the audience falls off the cliff. It's funny. In theory, you would say that, but anytime you're standing on a Lewis or a Dart or sitting on a bus at 6 p.m., a lot of other people sitting on those buses. Other stuff today. The news has emerged overnight that Jim Gavin has given back the money to the tenant that had overpaid him 16 years ago. Can I ask on this, Danny, why didn't he do that 2 months ago?
It just beggars belief. It absolutely just beggars belief. And, you know, there's a couple of good chronologies and kind of inside stories of how the demise came about. But I think Harry McGee and Colm Keane have a good version of it in the Irish Times, and Fionnán and Mary Regan have it in the Indo. Like Niall Donald, I know Niall Donald from college. We were in UCD together.
Now, this is the tenant in question. He's the deputy editor of the Sunday World.
The Sunday World. Like, Media House... You know, and it was my day that the Sunday World and the Irish Indo were all in on the same floor of Tabby.
They're right across from each other.
So, like Niall Donald said this himself in the podcast. I mean, he's been telling everybody this story for years, that, you know, he was, you know, essentially being kind of left short by Jim Gavin. And Fionnán, being the good reporter that he is, said, well, hang on, he's now a presidential candidate. I might do a bit of digging on this. Like, if Fionnán could have done it, was there no one within Fianna Fáil who could have said, actually, lads, this is a bit, this is going, like, you sure there's no issue with a tenant, no issue with a, no, you know, an unpaid bill? Like, that's kicking the tyres, and that just didn't seem to be done. Now, you might say, okay, well, we asked a question of Jim Gavin a few times, and he kind of said there was no problem. But, like, gee, like, you'd really want to make sure you've got your I's dotted and T's crossed. But the bottom line is, even as things transpired last weekend, was this a resigning matter? Like, was this a quitting matter? It's $3,000, like. I'm sure you kind of go, lads, mea culpa, I messed up here. Difficult time in my life. I've now rectified. I've almost given Niall...
You've rounded up to five.
We're all happy. Niall, because in fairness to Niall Donald, like, he didn't... There was no vengeance in his in the podcast he did with Nicola Tanned. There's no... And he said, he even said he felt sorry for Jim Gavin. Like, I mean, there was no... This was not, like, grandstanding saying, oh, how disgraceful it was. And I think he made the point that he was unaware of Jim's own financial difficulties at the time. That only came to light when it was in the Indo last weekend. So I just think it was completely and utterly avoidable. I think, you know, from Micheál Martin's perspective, him having to go in and do a mea culpa in front of the parliamentary party. Now, I would also say, if that's the extent of the angst in Fianna Fáil, they deserve Micheál Martin because they should...
Why, do you think there should have been more blood on the walls?
Like, sorry, 20 years ago, if that happened in Fianna Fáil, like, there would have been a resignation, there would have been an ousting, there would have been a heave and all the rest of it. But if, like, oh, it's shocking, it's dreadful. Oh, he came in and sobbed a little bit and we're all grand again. Like, seriously. This is the reason why Micheál Martin has lasted as long as he has as Fianna Fáil leader, like.
Was it survivable, Tabitha? If when this originally first emerged, whatever about 16 years ago, whatever about the pre-vetting, when it hit the papers that Jim Gavin owed $3,500 to a previous tenant, if he had written a cheque and said, I'm sorry, would he still be on the ballot for real?
Yes, I think it exactly what Danny was saying. I don't think this was a matter to withdraw your candidacy over. I mean, I even asked Fiona on a few days after the story. I said, did you think it was going to go the way that it went? He said, absolutely not. Like, you know, because it became such a massive thing. I think this goes down to, you know, there was a lot of focus earlier in the week and especially at the PP in relation to the parliamentary party, whether there was due diligence done, were the right questions asked. I actually think the bigger question is whether or not the party selected the right candidate. And what a lot of people were saying, you know, the TDs, because before the vote between Billy Kelleher and Jim Gavin happened, you know, Jim Gavin was going out and he was meeting TDs and he was saying what his vision for the presidency was. And some people were saying to me, yes, I can see that he could be a good president, but the question is whether or not he is a good candidate. And that is a completely different kettle of fish. You have to be able to survive the bloodshed of a campaign. So I think there's two questions, whether or not they really thought that he was the right candidate to be able to survive a campaign like this. And we obviously see that he didn't. But also whether or not it was explained to him how bloody this campaign really is. So I think it's also, was there... Enough minding of a candidate.
There's naive. I mean, we had months of discussion on this programme, as did several other shows, about how brutal the president... We know that a number of people pulled out of the race because of how... You kind of would have to guess this is going to be a hard slog.
Yeah, but Jim Gavin, in comparison, let's say, to Catherine Connolly or Heather Humphreys, him and his family have been involved in the campaign and the reporting. So, for example, do you remember the malicious smears that were going around and he had to contact Meta and TikTok, etc., to get these allegations and these rumours taken down? That involved his family. So, obviously, that hits different. It's not the same as when you're coming for the candidate as an individual or even that $3,500. But also, I think, again, it was his family that was brought into it. It was the fact that, you know, the tenant, Niall Donald, you know, called to his parents' house to give him a letter because he couldn't contact Jim Gavin.
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
You would, if that's the only recourse that you find. So I do think the questions really go to whatever about the due diligence, and then Stanley said kicking the tyres and asking whether or not you had an issue with the tenant or not. It was he capable of withstanding this campaign?
The next thing, of course, then, that this raises is, where does this leave us and where does this leave the electorate and what will they do? Front page of the Irish Times, Martin will vote for Humphreys, but Fianna Fáil won't tell voters to back her. Jim Gavin, of course, is going to be on the ballot and votable for, but says he doesn't want to be a candidate. What's going to happen?
I think people will find out when they read the Business Post tomorrow because we're related to like, shameless plug.
Oh, give us a leak. What's the Gavin percentage? I'm sorry.
Possibly tell you, Anton. I'd be shot.
Is he still in and around? Is he alive on the ballot? At least tell us that. Does he exist as a candidate?
He does exist.
Is he double figures?
I couldn't possibly say. He couldn't possibly say.
That looked like a nod.
I couldn't possibly say. But like the interesting thing, because we had to wrestle this, because our poll was actually, you know, polling had started before the exit, so our polling actually straddled the period over the resignation. But obviously, given that his name, the decision was taken that his name was remain on the ballot paper, we've obviously, like, we're running our poll on the basis that he's there. Like, but it'll be really interesting. What I will give you, there's a very high percentage of don't knows. In terms of
that's not giving me anything. What's the percentage of know about Jim Gavin? What's the percentage about Heather Humphreys? Go on, give us a sense. What's the direction of travel, as they say?
I love your enthusiasm for this. Bring me back tomorrow, and I'll be happy to talk about the poll ad nauseum.
Join us tomorrow between 10 and 12, where we dedicate the entire show to the Business Post poll. It is a big problem for Heather Humphreys, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a significant problem. But I think what this was reflected both in the Sunday in the poll last week, and I think in the our last poll was that. The high percentage of don't knows, so, and that's still a persistent factor, but two is where the young vote will go. It's tending more to go for Catherine Connolly, and there's a big question.
Will they come out and vote?
Mm. Whereas I think the hope, if you're, you know, if you're a Fine Gaeler, that if Heather is competitive, it's the older people who are likely to come out and vote for her more, and I think that's where they're going to try and hope for the last 2 weeks of the campaign.
What if we did it like Play Your Cards Right, where we just say hire... Daniel McConnell, editor of the Business Post, which apparently has some kind of poll in it tomorrow, and Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent and Indo Daily. Thank you both very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
You've probably heard the promise, quick, in-house sinus and snoring relief. Same solution, same timeline for everyone. The reality is no two people experience sinus and snoring problems the same, and your path to feeling better should reflect that. At Ohio ENT and Allergy Physicians, your care starts with a thorough evaluation by a local board-certified ENT physician. Sometimes an in-office option works, sometimes something else is better. The difference? Your plan is built around you. Visit OhioENTandAllergy.com and schedule an appointment today.